Welcome, everyone, to your ongoing journey or leap into a new world of opportunity. Inside Japan Podcast is a stepping stone for your next adventure. It is a show filled with informative interviews, perspectives on local life, and how you can master your path into the unknown. For today, kick back and listen to the wisdom of our host, James.
James here, coming at you with episode number 138. Of the Inside Japan Podcast, brought to you as always by JobinJapan.com. Quick notes here before we get right to the action. I'll just come out and say it. Not happy with how the audio turned out on this one, and there's no one to blame but me. I could say some excuses, which I will now. Still in the closet studio. I posted on Twitter a picture of where I record, and something did not go well with the recording here. And audio levels are a bit out of whack. I try my best to fix it. It's still very listenable. Let's not get me wrong. But it's not perfect, and I don't like it. But, hey, I got to put shows out there because there's a lot of good stuff in this one that I want to get out to the world. Big news, life news, closing on a house in now 3 days, my friends, on Friday. I'll be closing on a house as I record this, of course. So hopefully we'll be back to LT Insider Studios, and we'll be having some good sound for you out there because this one's not very good, but I promise, if you stick with me, if you've come this far, if you've come 450, whatever episodes it is, hopefully you're willing to come a bit further. Because there's some good stuff here with Anming and Charles, of course. And yeah, I said all I need to say. Thanks again, Inside Japan, rocking and rolling it for sponsoring the show. Go to jobsjapan.com because that's where you got to find your best job in Japan. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to y'all for listening. I'm done talking. Let's get to the episode. All right, guys, very special guest on the show today. I'm here with Anming, and we are going to talk today with a man named Charles. How are you feeling today, Charles?
I'm doing pretty well, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Anming, how are you feeling?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, James?
Pretty good, pretty good. Here to learn about Charles here. So, Charles, I'm going to start out with you. Let's learn, what are you doing currently in Japan?
All right, cool. So right now I'm working at a company called Zen Market. We're an e-commerce company for the Japanese market to sell abroad. So basically, for those of you who live abroad and want to buy Japanese stuff, or, you know, for Japanese people living abroad who want some stuff from back home, they can order things through, you know, Japanese Amazon, Japanese Rakuten, and then also we have a division that does auction stuff. So, you know, items that are a little bit harder to get your hands on, figures, you know, specialized items that are not available wide to the public. Those are also up for sale. And yeah, we handle all the shipping. It makes it super easy. And I actually work there as the HR guy. So lots of hiring, lots of interviews. I talk to foreigners and Japanese people all day.
Okay, that sounds interesting. I guess that's not really something you can jump into first as your career in Japan, though. So let's get a little bit about the history, right? So what brought you to working in Japan in the first place?
Totally. So yeah, obviously, HR is not exactly a first step when you get to Japan. I had been to Japan a couple times to study. I think as a lot of maybe your listeners have, I had a big love for Japan. I'm half Japanese, but my family's super Americanized, and I grew up in the States, so no Japanese in my family or anything like that. I started studying Japanese history, got a degree, an undergraduate degree, and then got a research position through the Fulbright program. They sent me out to Kobe University, so I was there for 10 months researching some Japanese law stuff, and from there, I just moved on to startups. I mean, I've been in startups and ventures basically the whole time I've been here, which is going to be 5 years, so I'm a little bit greener than some of your other guests, I know, but yeah, so I started in startups. I worked at a tiny Airbnb management company, this tiny little place, four people. I was the only, you know, Westerner in the whole building, and, you know, just worked my way up from there. Went from there to a sales position at a travel company. And then, you know, worked at a startup with my friend who I met at the travel company. And, yeah, it's just been sort of on a roll since then.
I want to know, like, you made it sound pretty easy, right? Like, you know, just, I'm in startups now.
Right.
What's the path to, like, get into your first startup? I mean, even walk us through that process. What is that even like?
For sure. So it definitely wasn't easy. You know, I can kind of look back on it now and be like, oh, yeah, I just like went and did some interviews in some like really, you know, cheap office buildings and, you know, really tiny spaces. For me, it was just, you know, I had some time. My research was basically over. And I got on some Japanese job sites. Am I allowed to say brand names? I don't know what I should.
Go for it. Chill out.
Sure. So Wantedly, which is now a little bit less foreigner focused, but once upon a time, 2 or 3 years ago, I mean, it was all people and companies looking for foreign, you know, workers, people who spoke 2 languages, 3 languages. And I mean, it was just a question of getting out there and doing it. My Japanese was pretty good. JLPT N2 at that point, and, you know, I was pretty comfortable with it. But it was really just, you know, I decided I was going to stay, and I decided that, you know, teaching English wasn't for me. You know, I'm not great with kids.
Me either.
So I started on that sort of path. I just said to myself, I have to get a job. I have to get a job in the next couple of months, otherwise my visa's out and I got to go home. So I just started interviewing at any place that would talk to me. I ended up being like the weird sort of quasi-legal, it was a very startup position. I would do English language customer service, and then in the afternoons write contracts for people in Indonesia to do our customer service when we were asleep.
Wow. So you were wearing a lot of hats then. I feel kind of connected to you because I was doing the same thing. You know, I saw that my visa was going to expire soon. So I'm like, oh, crap, I'll just take the easy route and go for an English job and then try to find something else. But and I also went to a university in Japan. I went to Waseda. So I'm kind of curious, Charles, what was your experience like in school in Japan and at Kobe University versus schooling in America? Was it totally different?
It was really different for a lot of reasons. A big thing is that when I was here after I graduated, because I was on a research grant, I wasn't exactly a student. I mean, I was researching about students, and if we want to get into that whole thing, I mean, it's a whole long story, but for me, it was a lot of research. So I spent a lot of time in the library. I mean, I would just be in the library all day, and then I would go to political demonstrations at night. And just, you know, it was just sort of, you know, I told the Japanese government, I told Kobe University what I was going to do, and I just sort of had to figure it out. So it wasn't a lot of student time. There wasn't a lot of fun. I enjoyed myself.
No parties, no frat parties in Japan. No. Sorry, you guys.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, the lacking of frats to begin with is one big thing. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, I showed up and I just said to myself, well, I have to go to the library. Otherwise, you know, the Japanese government's going to come for me because they're giving me all of this money to do something that I have no idea how to do. and I just sort of ran at it. I mean, it was really sort of a figuring it out as I went along deal.
Well, that's so true with Japanese universities and studying abroad that you're kind of on your own. But did you feel like anybody back in the States kind of looked down on your idea of studying abroad? Like, oh, you know, if it's not an American university, then the diploma is not worth the paper it's printed on. Because I ran into that when I said I wanted to study first in China and then in Japan. A lot of my family was like, is that going to be useful? Is that like for real?
That's something that I, you know, I have a little bit of experience with, and a lot of the people in my circles, really sort of felt pretty seriously. You know, undergraduates, you know, sort of okay. You can get away with doing undergraduate in Japan and going somewhere else. But, I have a lot of friends who were in master's programs and went back to the States and, you know, they're not super well looked upon. And I find it, you know, it really, for me, what I've heard is that it depends in Japan on who your professor is. You know, who you end up working with. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely heard it. I've heard people say, you know, why are you going to Japan? You need, like, you know, you have to stay in the States and get a master's here, or, you know, you should do your research here because then you'll have accreditation and you'll have professors. So it's definitely a concern. I mean, I will say that if you're doing like real research, that'll definitely help you when you go back to the States. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're out in the hinterlands out here where no one's ever heard of the country or the universities.
That was interesting. I was thinking, like, I mean, when you were asking the question, I was like, well, that's, I mean, maybe just people think it's not good to get a diploma in Japan. But Charles, you're saying there is some kind of, that is a real result of like, oh, diploma from Japan, it's not as, I don't know, I'd say important, but kind of special as a diploma from America, you're saying.
If I could add on to what he said, I think it really depends on the company you go into, because if you're working for a Japanese company in America, I think it would be invaluable. But if you just pick any job, then yeah, it's hit or miss in that case. But what do you think, Charles?
Yeah. I think you're right on the mark. I mean, you know, you can, you know, Waseda is a big deal here in Japan. But, you know, if you went to a lot of American companies that don't have you know, American, British, whatever, they don't have a lot of, you know, Japanese connections. They're going to look at a Waseda University graduate degree, and they're just going to be like, where is this? Like, what state is this? I mean, it's one of those issues. And, you know, I think it's just born out of, you know, lack of understanding, and it's sort of, you know, looking down on other parts of the world that I don't really get, but it's definitely there.
Mm. Interesting. Okay. I just definitely never heard of that. So I'm learning new stuff here. So I want to know, Charles, would you like when you do the NU on Ming too, you kind of have the mind of when I graduate from Japan to university, I want to work here for the long term, right? I mean, that was your thinking at that time?
Yeah. So I sort of said to myself, I'm going to stay for a couple more years. I mean, at that time I was sort of thinking, you know, I'll stay a year or two, I'll figure something out, and then I'll go home and I'll say, you know, I had all this experience abroad. But what ended up happening is, you know, I really liked it. The life is pretty easy here. I mean, you know, there are tough things every day, but it feels, you know, good to really sort of learn and be challenged every day. And not that I couldn't be challenged in the States, but you sort of get on a roll here. I mean, Anming, I don't know what your experience is really.
Same feeling for sure. Just the idea of everything being new, because I actually did spend a year abroad in China first, and then went back to the States to do an office job. And in my Chinese did help, or my experience abroad did help, because I ended up going for a Taiwanese company. So I used the language every day, and that was pretty invaluable. But I got really bored, you know, being in Michigan. It's not a real fun place. And there's something appealing about being abroad, and just every day is new, every day is challenging, and it's just kind of fun. I'm addicted to it, so I might be a lifer. I don't know. We'll see.
Wow. How about you, Charles? You decided that long term yet?
You know, I'm not quite there. I don't know how personal you want to get on this, but, you know, I have a fiance, and it's sort of one of those questions of where are we going to educate our kids? You know, not to jinx anything over here, but. It's, you know, you start to build a life, and, you know, maybe you sort of recognize this. I know that you've spent a lot of time here, but, you know, you start to build a life here, and it can be sort of daunting to unravel it all and try and move again.
Yeah, well, that's what I just went through, you know.
James knows.
So I was in Japan for almost 11 years, and then 4 months ago I moved back to America.
Right.
And, the main thing for us, too, was the education thing. I mean, it was like, what are we going to do? For me, we talked about this in the first episode you were on, just like, I saw this kind of difference of feeling from teachers about my kids just because they're half. And that was for me. I was like, all right, that was tough. But anyways, we're far away from that. We shouldn't get down that rabbit hole yet. You still have, you know, right. Your future family's coming for Charles.
Sorry
I have a question as well, if you don't mind. Like, this is really interesting because Charles's family is very Americanized, as he said. Not even a single person in your family speaks Japanese. And they were kind of living the American dream. So that's so interesting to hear a Japanese American say they want to come back to Japan. Like, there's so many Japanese people that are studying English really hard so they can get to America. That's their American dream. And here you've done the opposite. So what was the draw to bring you back to Japan after your family's been in the U.S. for so many years?
I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of one of those stories where I grew up, I was about 14 or 15 when I started studying Japanese. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm a school kid in America, you know, I learned Spanish and no connections to Spanish in my life. And I sort of thought to myself, well, I can keep studying Spanish and, you know, sort of not really care. You know, Spanish is a great language, but it's just sort of wasn't for me. And so it was either that, or, and I looked at my schedule and it was like, oh, they have a Japanese class at this school. I guess I should try it. Like, you know, my last name is Japanese. I've had people tell me I'm Japanese my whole life. No idea what that means. And I started studying it, and it became one of those things for me where it's like, yeah, like this is my family. I mean, really, really Japanese. My surname is Yoshimura. So if that gives you any idea.
So you were just drawn to your roots. It wasn't for like a salary advancement or anything. I don't think the money is what brought you over here. Perhaps something else.
It was definitely not the prospects of being an incredibly rich person, especially with my decision to stay in the Osaka area. You know, I've never really left Kansai, and I'm a sort of Kansai diehard at this point. So it was a personal thing. I mean, it was, if I don't learn it, none of my kids are going to know it. And no one else in my family, you know, my dad has 10 siblings and none of their kids really learn the language. I think one cousin, I think one of my cousins, you know, and there are many of them, came and studied and learned the language and then has since gone back.
10 siblings. I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about that.
it's a big family.
I guess so. Not the normal size of a Japanese family today, but that was pre-war that your family went over there, right? So yeah. Things have changed. Yeah, things have changed.
And like, I think my great grandparents emigrated in like the 20s or the teens, the 19 teens.
Wow.
Which now I say it out loud reminds me that it's 100 years ago, which is freaky. But
I gotta know, did you go through the, because me and Aming didn't have this problem, but you might have. Did you have people, when I came to Japan, of course, everyone doesn't think I speak Japanese. No one does still when I'm in Japan. But you probably have the opposite problem, right? Everyone thinks you can speak, but you might not be that great at it yet,
You'd be pretty surprised. You know, this is a big thing that I talk to a lot of other halves who are in Japan with me, and I don't look particularly Asian. Okay. I look pretty white by a Japanese standard, but, I get people asking me if I'm Hawaiian. I get people asking me if I'm German. I mean, it's sort of that half struggle here in Japan where they can't place you, so they just start throwing stuff at the wall.
Classic.
Every once in a while, I'll get someone who thinks I'm Japanese on the phone or something these days. But I mean, it's really, they come up and they say, "Oh, where are you from?" "No, wait, I'll guess," and then they're never right.
Nobody's ever mistaken me for a Japanese in person. The blonde hair, the blonde hair, there's something about it.
That'll really catch you up. They're not gonna fall for that one, as long as the hair is blonde.
So I want to know, since you, again, back to your work stuff here. So just, clearly you get the startup thing. People out there listening, though, I know are listening and saying, man, he made that sound too easy. So I want to know, I want to dig into that a little bit. Really what you did was, let's go through the kind of the credentials you had. Obviously you had N2 level, you said. That's good. I mean, that's a thing most people don't have. Not N1 yet, but hey, N2, that's something. And went to university in Japan, another good thing. And so what was your resume like at this point? Was it just the education history, or what were you going to those startups with what was on your resume, I guess?
My resume when I got here and when I sort of finished my research grant was research grant, bicycle store manager, and intern at a magazine in New York City. So, I mean, I didn't have any big, I hadn't worked an internship at Nomura Shokan or Sony, Panasonic, Kyocera in this area. I didn't have any big credentials. And that was sort of the trick there, was going for the startups. I mean, if I had gone for some place I interviewed at places like Iemitsu, the big gas conglomerate, and I interviewed at Nitori, and I interviewed at Kyocera. They just kept dropping me. I wouldn't get an interview, or they'd just, ignore all my calls. I think the startups is really a good way to go. And there's a huge investment. I mean, I really don't recommend it for people who, aren't really willing to put in the time and the effort. But, it does give you a little bit more wiggle room, because they're not necessarily looking for people with, huge resumes. They're just looking for people who are, hungry.
Interesting. So let's talk about hit or miss rate. I mean, how many resumes do you think you sent out before you got the job that the job started you off here?
Oh God. It's gotta be in the hundreds, right? I mean, I can't.
Yeah. Wow.
There was literally a point, and I'm sure everyone out there, regardless of country or whatever, has experienced this, where you just go on LinkedIn and you look at all the jobs and you just, you search for only things you can apply with just your LinkedIn profile, and you just keep hitting send until someone gets back to you.
That is hit or miss. That's a definition of hit or miss.
I spent some time on companies that I was really interested in, but there were a couple of weeks there where, you're getting down to that last month or two on your visa, and you're just thinking to yourself, I got to get an interview. I can't sit in my dorm room for the next, 3 weeks until I get kicked out.
Been there. Not that long ago.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That's a bad feeling. That is a bad feeling indeed.
It's definitely stressful. And I will say that, just getting the interview can be such a big game changer. I mean, I'm sure everyone listening to this who is trying to get a job, if they just get that one interview, will be ecstatic. But I mean, it can really turn things around, is just getting that one. And, maybe I made it sound easy, but it wasn't like some grand strategy. I was really just, I sat down with myself and I said, I'm going to put in the time. at, you know, this place, and I'm really going to try and figure it out, and I'm going to, you know, get a better job in 2 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it sort of worked out.
Yeah, but I'm asking because I get the emails from people saying, I'm trying to get a job not in teaching, but then they don't, you know, they don't send in those 100 resumes. You know, they're like, well, I've sent my resume in 6 places. I didn't hear anything. So I'm trying to hammer home the point, guys, of it's a long grind to get a job that's not teaching if you really want it. And some people don't get it. You know, it can take years in some cases, you know. So just as you hear from Charles here, sometimes you got to send 100. So no more emails until you send me 100.
I feel like this is advice to me, too, because I'm going to be looking for a job next month, and I would like to leave the teaching thing. And if it takes 100 resumes, then I guess it takes 100 resumes.
Yeah, there you go. So,
one thing I will say, and this is a big sort of thing for me, is that, you know, I was in that startup. I worked as a recruiter. So, you know, a recruiter outside of other people's companies. So they'd call us and they'd say, we want, you know, someone who speaks English and speaks Japanese. And I think that recruiters can be a good way to do it. I mean, there are the big, you know, multinationals that, you know, can be a little daunting, places like Robert Walters or Hayes. But, you know, if you've got something, you can give them your resumes and they will see if there's anything for you. You know, maybe there's not, but you can be more strategic than I was, is just what I'm saying. You know, my strategy from the start was just to sort of keep running and you know, keep throwing things at the wall until something sticks. But you can be smarter about it. But, you know, it's going to take a grind. I mean, 6 companies, you know, maybe you'll get it in 6 companies. I don't know. But yeah, you really gotta be very pinpoint accurate at that rate, for me, at least.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So let's jump into what you're doing now exactly. So, you know, you said you're an HR. So can you walk us through what's the kind of a normal day for you there at this HR position?
Sure. So, you know, a really normal day for me, I get into the office at, you know, 9:15, sit down at my desk, you know, open up my email, open up all the job posts that we have and, you know, scroll through everything, see if there's anyone worth, you know, looking at. I'm really sorry to any of your listeners if you've gotten an email from me saying that we're not going to give you an interview. but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I go to work, I deal with people outside the company who want to get inside the company, and I deal with people inside the company who have problems. It's, you know, and it's a big language thing. I mean, if you really want to get into HR in Japan, you've got to really, you know, really get stuck into the Japanese. And I'm in a place now where I'm pretty comfortable. You know, I send company-wide memos in both languages. So, you know, right now with coronavirus, for example, you know, if we're going to extend remote working, you know, it comes out to my desk. You know, someone sends me an email that says, you know, we're extending the remote work rules. So I, you know, sit there and translate it, you know, send it out to the whole company and then get, you know, 20 questions about, you know, how long we're going to extend it and things that I say, look at the message I sent you. So.
Right. You know, I was reading in your profile that you were a translator as well. And I've been wondering, because I've done a little translation, James does translation as well. What level of Japanese do you think you need to be able to translate things? Do you have to be really good or just really good at writing, not necessarily speaking?
I don't think that there's quite a level of Japanese. I'm doing the whole jail thing to be honest. For the job application thing, it'll be better. It'll be a huge help. But in terms of real skill, I think that it's hard to say on that level. JLPT N2 is probably where you're going to want to be to start translating. And I don't really even think you need to be, I mean, you need to be a good writer. You also need to be a good reader. You know, there's a lot of nuance in Japanese that may not come out in the eventual English or whatever language you translate to. But, you know, you got to be really good at close reading. You really got to understand what you're reading. So, you know, if you want to be a translator here full time, I mean, I was definitely not like a true translator. But if you really want to translate, I mean, I think you got to be good enough at Japanese that you can really get what you're reading.
Right. Right. I always thought that there was less pressure to translating documents as opposed to translating like live meetings or something like that, where you don't have time to look something up in a dictionary if you don't know the word or know the best word. So I thought maybe you could get away with N2. That sounds about right if you're translating documents, because you have time, you have unlimited time to look into that and look stuff up if you don't know it. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, I don't know if any of, if you've met any of them, but the, I mean, the true simultaneous translators, those people are machines. I do not understand.
Yeah, that's amazing level. I've only met one, and it's like, oh my, it's incredible. You just, your mouth drops when they can do it simultaneously. It's like insane. And yeah, definitely, like you said, I mean, when you're just sitting at your desk, at your desk, at your pace, translating something, yeah, that's the way to go if you want less stress translation for sure. So how about this? So HR, you know, in Japan is definitely a job that a lot of people think is obtainable. I don't know if it's obtainable. It's a path a lot of foreigners take as their first jump into not teaching jobs, right? You know, I think that's fair to say. A lot of HR people here, on the show before. But a lot of people say it's not, let's say, you're dealing with a lot of problems, right? And it turns out that a lot of people don't have a lot of fun doing it. Because, you know, a big part of your job, and correct me if I'm wrong, Charles, is telling people, no, you're not good enough. That sucks. Sorry about that. Our company can't reimburse you for that. But is that true? Is that true or not? You let me know.
I mean, it's definitely a big part of it. I mean, it's a lot of it is saying, you know, sorry, but you know, there were 20 other people who interviewed and you are not good enough to get, you know, past this round of interviews. You know, obviously we don't tell them that. We say, sorry, but we're not going forward. But HR stuff is not necessarily fun work. There are a lot of fun parts of it. HR branding is one of my favorite things about my current job. I mean, I get to figure out how we're going to present ourselves, how we're going to be seen in the world to people who want to join us, which is, you know, really rewarding. But there's a lot of tough stuff. I mean, you know, a lot of telling people no, telling people we can't pay you for that. And it's not for the faint of heart is what I will say.
But maybe it's a little easier than American companies, because I've heard, I don't know, you can confirm this or debunk it. They don't fire people at Japanese companies. So at least you don't have to do that. Is that true, or is that just a stereotype out there?
No, that's pretty true. I mean, you know, obviously with the current way of the world, you know, when a company goes under, you're getting fired. Like, there's no really running around on that one. But yeah, Japan has a pretty big sort of, you know, they don't love to fire people. They don't fire people very often. It does happen, obviously. You know, if you burn down the building, they're gonna tell you.
They're just gonna transfer you to the other office.
Right. So I mean, you know, the chances of you getting fired in an American company where, you know, you come in one day and someone says, "Get out of here, pack up your stuff, you're done," not gonna happen here. Japanese labor laws are very, 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 very on the side of the worker.
I thought it was because of the culture. I didn't think it was a legal thing. I thought it's just, you know, you're part of the family. Whereas in America, it's like, well, are you making us money or not? You know, we got to balance this out. What's best for the company? There's no real close relationship in the American companies like there is in Japan. You're like getting rid of a family member.
I mean, there's definitely both sides. You know, the old Japanese culture, the Shushin Koyo, so that'll be something for everyone to look up if they don't know it already.
Lifetime employment.
You know, sort of, exactly. You got it. Yeah, the lifetime employment culture out here definitely, you know, makes that a cultural side of things, but it's also not easy to fire someone. And, you know, someone who's in an HR position where, you know, people get, you know, sort of, people can, you know, have issues with each other where, you know, they really don't like each other. And, you know, you really have to learn about all those laws. Luckily, I haven't had to fire anyone. And I hopefully will not for a long time or ever. But it's definitely not quite as easy. I mean, in the States, you could really walk in and if you're the boss, just say, you know, everyone in the room, get out. You know, you're getting severance packages, but leave. And you really can't do that here. I mean, you have to have a very serious reason. Otherwise, you can go to Hello Work. And I do recommend Hello Work for all of the difficulties that they can sort of cause because they don't, you know, they don't have the best English support and all that. You know, if you feel like you've really been wronged by an employer, it's important to go talk to them. And maybe they'll say, you know, you have nothing to, you know, there's nothing we can do, go home. But in a lot of cases, they'll at least be willing to talk to your old employer to figure out what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know from, you know, ALT companies, it's, the amount of like paperwork they have to get ready to fire someone is often just not worth it. So they'll just keep them on We'll pay you, just don't work until your contract is up. I mean, that's the level it is, because it's so hard.
I've heard about that. And they'll just sit at the desk for 8 hours. They try to, like, pressure people to quit themselves. They won't actually fire people. They'll embarrass you so much that you get all your work taken away, and you can just sit there like a lump on a log every day while everyone else is working hard. And it plays into that idea of, the Japanese idea, you're causing other people trouble. Look at you. You're not doing anything 8 hours a day. Yeah. Everybody else is. Right. You should just go home. You should just quit yourself. So that's really how they fire people. Not directly, but indirectly.
I will say, I've heard. I've never taught English, so I can't speak for all the people who are, in companies X, Y, and Z. But I will say that the world of Japanese office work is a little bit less intense than that. I mean, it's, I have never seen in my 5 years of working in many, many startups where the life was very stressful, someone be told, sit here for the next 8 hours. You're too much of a screw up to have you work on anything.
Well, that's good. That's what they call pawahara, harassment. Yeah. Harassment. Not that happens to everyone, but if they don't want you, then that's the way some people get fired. Voluntarily, on their own will.
I've seen some screaming matches. I mean, I've seen some like real ugly yelling, matches in the office. Not at my current company. Again, my current company is very, very calm, and I'm very happy about it. And I can talk about getting out of a black company if you want to talk about that, because I do have quite a bit of experience. Ooh, okay. But yeah, I mean, everything I hear, and again, never been in ALT, I cannot speak to that fact. Everything I hear about being in ALT sounds so difficult.
I've never done it either. I didn't want to do it either. I went to a conversation school, so I can't vouch for that, whether it's good or not.
I can say here.
So can I ask a question?
Yes,
James?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask what your opinion is, because you probably have the most sort of broad, English teacher in Japan experience.
Yeah. So I was ALT for 7 years. I've wrote, I don't know how hundreds of thousands of words now about being ALT. And I can say this, everyone out there listening, if you try, being an ALT is a very easy job. The moment you stop trying, that's when it becomes difficult. So that's as easy to get, right? The level of work required of being an ALT is very, very fair and doable for everyone out there. But when people don't put in that effort needed, then stuff starts going bad, And that's a very general statement, I know. But just if you try, you'll have no problems at all. And I went through years without my company sending me an email because they had never had problems because I was just doing my job. And that's how, if you go through life like that, just trying, doing the job you're asked to do, you'll have no problems. I think that's fair of any job, probably, but that's my opinion.
I think that's really Japanese too, because in America, and I do have experience working in America, although it was for a Taiwanese company, but even if you do your job every day and you come in every day on time, you do the right stuff, your job is not secured, because at any moment they could say, this isn't benefiting us enough. Goodbye. Yeah, you did a good job, but sorry. That really shocks a lot of Japanese people. I know, because I've told my students about this many times. We've talked about cultural differences in the workplace, and they're like, but they did everything right. How could they get laid off? I'm like, well, it happens. It's just there's more security in the job in Japan, it seems, than America. You're kind of never sure of your position. They can just tell you the day of, pack your stuff and leave. Indeed. Whereas that probably wouldn't happen in a Japanese company.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, you definitely, the only thing that happens in an ALT job is the contracts, right? The contract of the BOE to the company might lose the contract to the BOE 1 year. That can happen. That's a little bit different story. That's part of the ALT job, is that you have a year-long contract. And there's no longer contracts than that. So that's part of the job. But getting back off, Charles, you set the table there, Charles. You said getting out of a black company, so we got to hear about that, of course.
Okay, so I will not name names. I spent a year, and it was a good experience. I had a lot of fun, a lot of good friends who were there, but I mean, I worked at a company where I did at least 100 hours of overtime every single month.
Whoa.
Wow. I mean, really sort of driving. It would be like, I have to get out the next 30 quotations for this job. Otherwise, I'm going to be in some real shit with the people above me. And it was like one of the most stressful experiences of my life. It was that sort of Japanese really grinding experience of overtime. And while it was a good experience, and I'm much stronger for it, willing to put in that level of, you know, stress, it definitely hardens you. I mean, I'm definitely more set up to work in a Japanese company now than I will ever be otherwise. And at some point, you're just going to come in to work and you're going to say, I have to get out of here. If I do not get out of here, I'm going to die in this chair or I'm going to go crazy. And from there, it's a question, obviously, you know, companies that drive you that hard are not going to want to see you try and leave because they think, you know, they put a lot of work into you to get you to work hard. So what you need to do is, first of all, I really recommend at that point to use sites like Recruit or, you know, if you have the Japanese, to use Japanese job boards and stuff like that. But LinkedIn also works. Don't be afraid to take, you know, a day off to do an interview. Call in sick. Do whatever you need to do to get out of there because, you know, the sort of charm, I don't know about you guys, but I sort of love older Japanese media, not so much anime guy over here, but, you know, older sort of Akira Kurosawa movies and stuff that's, you know, very sort of plotting and it has a very Japanese feel to it. And my experience in jobs here, you know, where I sit at a desk all day and just make paperwork all day, you know, 12 hours a day, was really fun. And I loved it until, you know, I had to leave and I had to run and I ran as fast as I could. So just don't be afraid to get out of there. You're going to feel, for people who are in that experience, I know exactly what you feel like. You don't have enough time to do job hunting. If you quit, you only have your 3 months. So, you know, you can't do that either. Just like, you know, get on a job board and take lunch alone for a couple weeks and just try and get an interview and then take a day off. Because if you don't start doing it, it's never going to happen.
Hmm. Yeah, because if you're working that much, yeah, you don't have any time to do anything else. I mean, where are you going to find your next one? So yeah, it makes sense for sure.
Yeah. And people tie themselves in these knots. And I tied myself in the same knots of, you know, I'm working, you know, I have to work. I have to be here tomorrow. If I'm not here tomorrow, you know, they're going to be super pissed. And I don't want that on my head for the next day. You just have to call it at some point because it becomes this never-ending cycle of, you know, you have so much work that you couldn't possibly do it on your own, so you can't take any time off to get the hell out of there.
Wow, okay. So to more happy note, though, not that, a great company to work for.
Yes.
So you hire people and yourself to work in various places. I want to know what makes a resume stand out for you? Like, and also conversely, what makes it hit the trash right away? I mean, what are you looking for in a resume when you see one?
Absolutely. So for me, it's very simple, and this is going to sound like the most sort of boring thing that you've ever heard. A good resume for me is one that's well crafted. I don't need a perfect cover letter or anything like that. Just, you know, make sure you use the same font the whole way through. Make sure that, you know, you don't, when you're making your resume, especially a Japanese resume in Excel, make sure that all of the lines that encase the boxes are full. Because, you know, it really does not look great, especially in that sort of hyper-focused Japanese sense when, you know, you've got four different fonts going on and, you know, half of the boxes is square that you copy-pasted because the Excel is like broken now.
So Japanese resumes are quite different though. Also in addition to that, don't they include like things an American resume doesn't? A picture, your gender, your age, your marital status, things like this that we would never put on an American resume.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about American resumes. Never worked there. For all of my being born and raised in New York City, never worked like a real job in the States. But there's a lot of weird stuff. And you can look up tons of articles. There's a great Gajin Parlor article that I used to send to people as a recruiter before my HR job. That'll tell you exactly how to write your resume. You should definitely look into those. It's a careful process. Write it once, you know, spend a couple hours, really write it carefully, and then, you know, just use the same thing, just change the date every couple times. Those are the things that really make me throw an application away. You know, poor formatting, you know, just showing me that you don't care enough to like make sure you send me something readable. And it seems small, but you'd be surprised. I get a ton of applications that have, you know, poorly written or poorly edited resumes or poorly formatted resumes. But, you know, a really good resume for me is someone who writes something on their resume that makes it clear that they actually know what the job is, and makes it very clear that, you know, they've maybe even just Google searched the company. You think, and I was definitely someone who fell to this, you know, sort of fell prey to this. You think that they're not really going to read anything, that they're not really going to look at what you write about them and why you're interested. But, you know, they might just even scan it. And if it's clear that you had to do more than, you know, 30 seconds of prep work before the application, it'll definitely give you a big leg up. And that's something that I failed to do for many years here.
Mm-hmm. And I'll ask you, Peter, the guy that runs jobinjapan.com, also sponsors this podcast. He says the number of instantly out resumes he receives is over 50%. What I mean by instantly out is it's one look and says, well, they didn't care. As in there's spelling errors all over the place, there's formats. Would you agree with that number? It's above 50%?
I mean, I don't know above, but 50% sounds pretty fair. Actually, you know, not to, you know, put Peter on blast here, but Peter and I had an email exchange the other day where someone sent him a, you know, an email about one of my jobs that's on Jobs in Japan, you know, plug, everyone go check out the jobs for Zen Market on Jobs in Japan. but I mean, like, we had an email exchange where it's just like, he forwarded me the email the person sent. The person did not spell out the word your, you know, the internet speak, you are'd it. And, you know, and I sent him a message back immediately. I'm like, yeah, give him my email. Also, I'm going to reject him the second I get a response from him. Because if he's not going to write out the word your, he clearly doesn't care.
Yeah. It's just, that's why I did a whole show about, like, there's so many people that, you know, just take themselves out of the running with this kind of silly stuff. And it's still, once you get on the, at least get on the level where they're reading your stuff level, you know, so make sure your formatting's correct, the font's correct, the no spelling mistakes. And then you're in the game a little bit. But so many people just don't care enough, I guess. I don't know. It's crazy how many just don't care. I don't know.
And obviously, I can't speak for all recruiters all over Japan or, you know, even foreign recruiters just in Osaka. But I will say that, you know, if I think someone might be a good fit, if they seem like a good person, which I'm sure that, you know, most of your listeners believe that they're good people, you know, if you seem like someone who's going to try, I will actually fight for applicants. I mean, I will, you know, I will sit down in there in that meeting room and I'll say, you know, this person's Japanese is a little weak. It's a little, you know, what do we want JLPT N3, but, you know, he really only has N4. But, you know, he or she is a good person and seems like they really care and they really want to work at this job. And they like us as a company. So, you know, give them a chance. And I don't know about everyone else, but I will sit down and say that if you seem like you care. I'm not going to waste my time on you if you're not going to write out the word your. Find a point on it.
I have a quick question because you mentioned it. Do the companies really care that much about JLPT? If you just have a high Japanese level, but you've never taken the test, does that matter in the interview or is it a must?
So, I mean, this is the big question. No, I mean, this is what funds the JLPT at this point.
Yeah. Right?
I will say personally, I am probably the least JLPT focused recruiter that I know. I will take an interview if your resume seems decent, or I will at least take a phone call if it seems decent and you write that you have a JLPT N5 or you don't write that you have the JLPT. A lot of companies will not look at your resume, and that is just an unfortunate fact, and I'm sure you both know about this, of how much the Japanese love paperwork and love certifications. Yep. So, you know, and we know them. I mean, we all know them. There's the JLPTN ones who can't not speak a word of Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right. They can read and write perfectly. But they can't.
Or not even.
Right. And we also all know the Japanese people with the TOEIC scores of like, you know, 700, 800, 900 who can't hold a conversation. I mean, I am not focused on them, but Japanese people will throw away your application if you do not, you know, seem to have perfect Japanese if you're writing a JLPT of anything less than N2 or N1. Not all of them. Some of them are really nice. I know a lot of great recruiters. I worked with some of them. Really nice people. But some companies will not even look at your stuff. And that is an unfortunate reality. I will, though. So you can send me applications.
Yeah. But anyone else, you got to have the paper. Paper to prove it.
I would say, though, that, see if you agree, Charles, real quick. I think, though, that shouldn't some people, like, you know, take it as, well, I can't apply to that because they say they need N2. Because I can tell you, when I was first trying to get a translator, a lot of places said you got to have N2, and I didn't have it yet, but I still applied and got some jobs. So you don't, it shouldn't stop you from sending. They just might throw it away in the end.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that is a very good point as well. that thank you for bringing it up. If you do not have the JOPT, that does not mean you can't apply. It just means that you have to prepare yourself for the idea that you're not going to get response. And if you can deal with that, then, you know, just, you know, again, I am not a good example of how to get a job here. You know, the grid is good, but just send them your resume. I mean, they're not going to come to your house or anything. Like, you won't get a response. And what's that going to do to your self-esteem? Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's a good point. So yeah, you did mention ZenMarket is hiring, so we got to talk about that a little bit. What kind of jobs can people apply for at ZenMarket? Do you obviously have to go through your strenuous testing, you know, policies? But what can they get hired for?
So we have a lot of positions open, and we have a lot of positions opening this year. You know, for all of the difficulties that coronavirus has brought, we're expanding almost every single team in the company. So we have positions in logistics, you know, we have positions in, you know, in HR that are not, you know, not quite open just yet, just cause I just, you know, I've been there for not too long now. But we have marketing positions. I know that there are a lot of people who have marketing degrees or marketing internships who really want to market here in Japan and want to market abroad. We have a ton of positions open for marketers, English language marketers. I mean, English, Chinese, French, Italian, everything that you can imagine. Tons of languages open for marketing, tons of languages open for customer support. We're always hiring more. We're always looking for new people. And I, you know, if you put in your email that you, or your resume that you heard about us on Alt Insider, I will look at your application a little bit more seriously, because it means that you heard this and thought long enough to say, maybe I'll send that weird guy who has a lot of strange experience a letter.
I'm sending it to you. I'm sending you my resume, Charles. You got to help me get a job. I need to get out of this thing. I want to get out of English teaching. How long do you think it would take? I'm asking you for real, because I really am going to try to look for jobs starting next month. I'm a person who speaks English, Chinese, and Japanese, although I've never taken the JLPT, so that's maybe a problem. I have a master's degree and also a degree from America. Realistically, how long should I expect to be searching for a job?
Good question.
In Tokyo.
I'll be honest, please.
I mean, it's definitely not as easy as me saying 10 and it being 10.
10 applications or 10
days,
months, 10 years.
what I'm willing to come out and say, you know, just in my relatively short experience, I mean, I'm no Peter, but what I'm willing to say is that you sound like you have a really good profile. You know, I don't know what your Japanese is like, but you have a pretty high achieving profile. I mean, you have higher education degrees above the bachelor's level from multiple countries. You know, you have the English thing. You're not like 60 years old or anything, right? Like, I don't imagine that it would be that long. 1 month, you know, it'll be tight regardless. You know, even if you're right on point, it'll, you know, 1 month is a short time, even in any other country as well. But you could be out of there really soon. I mean, you know, back when I was in my recruiter days, you know, I have to look at your resume, but if I had your profile on my desk, I'd say maybe, you know, very fast 1 month.
Wow. I was thinking 4 or 5 months, but I wasn't super confident because I've never done this in this country before.
Yeah. I mean, right now, it might be a little bit longer because right now with the coronavirus, you know, a lot of people are out of work. So a lot of people are in the market, especially all the foreigners who used to work in hotels. So, you know, you got a lot of competition out there. But, you know, my big recommendations to you, and I hope this works out, because please, you know, if this works and you come back on the show and talk about how I was so smart, I will get so many applications you don't even know.
I'll put it on my YouTube channel. I'll say, this absolutely guy knows what he's doing.
Exactly. I would say you should really look into some of the big recruitment companies. I mean, you should send your applications off to like the recruiting firms, Robert Walters, Michael Page, Hayes. You know, they, it can be a little bit tough. I was a recruiter. I know how sort of difficult it can be to deal with them because they, you know, are, you know, sort of sometimes relatively slimy people. I was one of them. I can say that. No one else can. But I will say that that is probably a good option for you. You have great educational experience. I mean, I imagine your master's was in international relations or something along those lines.
It was. How did you know? You guessed exactly what it was.
You know, I'm a seer. You can call me.
You just knew. Foreigner, international relations.
You know, you also speak three languages and you studied in three countries. It wasn't a, you know, it wasn't exactly a shot in the dark. But you got a lot of great experience. You should definitely shoot that out to a lot of people. You know, get as widespread so that you get a lot of options.
I'm feeling better about this.
How about this, Charles? Because, you know, I'm being just kind of glossed over. She does have a huge YouTube channel and gets a lot of views. A lot of people know who she is. Is that, I'm sure in some positions it's a very big plus, but is there some place where that's also kind of a negative? They say, well, we don't want to have Anming here because she has a lot of big audience. I mean, that in Japan, it might seem like that might be a negative for some people. What you tell me though, Charles, is that true or false?
You know, so I'm not the master of, call Peter on the show if you want the master of Japanese recruitment, because it's not me. But I will say, you know, if Anming wanted to get, you know, positions in marketing, positions in digital marketing, things like that, she might actually have a better chance because she has such a big YouTube following.
Yes. I mean, you know, I was thinking that.
Yeah, I would put it on my resume. In my Japanese resume, I would say YouTube channel, this many followers. Because at least it'll stop them in their tracks when they're looking at, you know, if you have a couple hundred thousand or even 10,000 followers on YouTube, they will be confused and it will give you more time to like get into that interview.
Good. So if it's a marketing job, it makes sense, right? I'm marketing something.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not traditional marketing. I mean, if they want you to make like print ads, it's probably not going to help, but I will say I have heard stories, and again, this is a question for Peter, as I am, you know, relatively new to the world of HR. There might be some Japanese companies that are a little freaked out by that. There might be some Japanese companies that think one of two things, and this is something I find frustrating. Either, you know, she really wants to be a YouTuber, so she's going to do this for, you know, 10 months and then quit once she's, you know, a full-time YouTuber, or they'll think, you know, we really don't want someone with this much media presence inside the company, because it might be a worry case for them on, you know, maybe it'll turn out bad for us. I can't really speak for, you know, all Japanese companies, but I can say that I can see either of those things happening as well.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Probably both. But anyway, Anming, we're not trying to get you depressed here. You got to use that.
Oh, gosh.
I think you should use that as a, get Anming hired show at the end here. But I think you could use that as a powerful tool. You know, that's a huge thing. I think more people would want than don't want. But all right, Charles. Great talk so far. Great talk today. I want to know, where should I send people to check out that job on Zen Market? Where can they find more about you if they want to find you? Anything you want to talk about, right now is your chance.
Sure. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you search Charlie Ishimura, I can send you the spelling after, Charley, not E-S, or I-E. Yoshimura spelled the Japanese way. You'll find me on LinkedIn. You can also find all of our job posts that are currently open for foreigners, specifically, you know, language stuff. On Jobs in Japan. So, you know, big shout out to the Jobs in Japan people. They have a great platform. It's really easy for me as a recruiter. And it's a good option. You can also find a lot of our stuff on other sites. You message me on LinkedIn, I'll send you job posts. Don't worry about it. You can find us on either place. And we have a corporate site. So if you go to corporate.zenmarket.jp, you can also find some of our job posts there.
There you go, guys. Charles, thanks so much for your time today. I'm Ming. Any final questions or words?
Oh, well, I just want to say I feel better after talking to Charles. Thank you. I wasn't feeling too good about applying to jobs, but maybe it'll be easier than I think.
You'll be fine. I'm really, all the people in the world that I'm worried about right now, Anming is not one of them. So.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. There you go. End on a high note, guys. Thanks so much for listening. And once again, Charles, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good one.
You too.
I really hope you enjoyed today's Inside Japan podcast. Dive deeper into our world and learn more about what awaits you. Check out altinsider.com. And for regular, up-to-the-minute job postings, check into jobsinjapan.com for the next big gig. please tune in for our regular excursions into the world of Japan, and good luck! Ganbatte! Japan.com.